Let's do a podcast. Let's do a
podcast.
Let's do a podcast about Charlotte. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a
podcast.
Let's do a podcast about Charlotte.
Welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of the Charlotte Podcast. This is John.
And this is Miller, and this is episode 121. Hey, folks, subscribe on iTunes, rate and review. We laid out a challenge that if people left us a review on iTunes, we'd read it. So I'd like to read a review that was left.
John, hoisted by our own petard.
Sorry to say, but these guys are kind of boring. And after over 100 episodes, they still sound like they're in their first ones. No polish at all. Also, not sure why, but they can't seem to get the audio level mixed right. I have to turn on my device volume all the way up for this single podcast, and it's still barely above a whisper. Meh. 2 stars.
Thank you, Chuptastic.
We did look at his other reviews, and that's the highest thing he's ever left. So 5-star review!
Yeah. On a relative scale, we are destroying the curve. Yep. So careful what you wish for.
We're on social media, Twitter and Instagram, CLT Podcast. We're also on Facebook at The Charlotte Podcast. Or you can email us at thecharlottepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to be our friends, you'll be friends of friends of friends. Listen to the Queen City Podcast Network. There's a 5 total great podcasts there. John,
yes.
You big fan?
Huge fan.
So we've been working with them. We are really excited about this and watching this thing grow.
Yes.
John, go ahead and tell me what's on today's episode.
So this week, a guest that has been a long time coming onto the pod.
You crushed out a little bit. I wish this was a video episode. Yeah. There's a little red in the cheeks.
I got excited. He's an icon in Charlotte history, and that is Charlotte community historian Tom Hanchett. Joined us finally, and
yeah,
we talked
Charlotte
enough
about
history.
Him.
Yes,
you've stolen his notes enough.
yeah, exactly. We also we have a history segment, despite talking all about history in the main part, and that is on the rocking chairs at the airport.
Mm.
They have their own unique history, and then as always, supportive words from supportive guy.
Last week we had Kristen Weil and Adam Rue of the Charlotte Magazine talking about the Bobs. Or if you're uninformed, the Best of the Best Awards.
Correct.
But great episode. They kind of walked us through the process of how they create this incredible list, and also kind of pointed out as we went section to section some of their favorite things, which were cool to get the insight of how they thought about it. Apparently there's a chili cheeseburger that Kristen can't... Chubbs?
Yes.
What's the name of it?
Yes.
So pretty incredible. We also do want to give a little shout out to our friends at Open Street 704. They are having an event. Their next one is this Saturday, April 29th.
That's right.
Where is it at, John?
From 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. They will be opening streets in Plaza Midwood, Belmont, Villa Heights, Noda, Optimus Park, and the Commonwealth neighborhood.
I'm really bummed. I will not be able to make it.
Oh, no.
But that is a pretty good area.
It's always a great time. Yeah, like that path is going to be awesome.
I assume you'll probably... That's.
I will be there, yes. I will be on Open Street 704. Once again, that is Sunday, April 29th from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. in the Plaza Midwood, Belmont, Villa Heights, Noda, Optimus Park, and Commonwealth neighborhoods.
When we come back... Charlotte community historian Tom Hanchett.
All right, we are here with Charlotte community historian Tom Hanchett. Welcome.
Good to be here.
So, Tom, we have lots to get to.
Yeah, I wasn't going to do this, but now I just see John grinning. This is John's dream podcast. He is going to fanboy about this. You are the inspiration behind every history segment.
Oh, shucks.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I use your work frequently in references on our history segment. So, I have some questions for you that we can get to about Charlotte history. Before we do that, we'd love to hear from you, kind of your background with the city, obviously your time with the museum, and work you did around. Can you take us through kind of where you're from? Are you a Charlotte native, and how did you get here?
There are Charlotte natives. I've met a few of them, but I'm not one of them.
I knew that.
Most folks know me because I worked for Levine Museum in the New South for about 16 years, helped create the permanent exhibit there. But But actually, I came here in 1981 to work for the Historic Landmarks Commission.
Okay.
They had a 14-month grant from the federal government through the state to study older neighborhoods. And I knew absolutely nothing about Charlotte. I knew that it was the home of the University of Virginia. And that for some reason, it was on the coast of South Carolina, yep. which didn't make sense, but I never looked into it. And it was a 14-month grant, and I can only count up to about 10, so I'm hoping the 14 months aren't up. But that was back in 1981, and I wrote histories of a lot of older neighborhoods, helped get a lot of buildings designated. And a lot of that stuff is online at the Historic Landmarks Commission website, but also at www.historysouth.org.
Yep.
And then I went away for a while, got a PhD at Chapel Hill, went and taught a number of places, ended up at Cornell University, and was really missing working with people who weren't graduate students. Huh. I love graduate students. I was a graduate student for a long time in order to get a PhD. But I really like working with people who are living in the midst of history and want to know more or don't know they want to know more. Ooh. But I can kind of pull them into it.
Yeah. Fantastic.
So in now you're here, you're doing community history. What does that kind of entail? So you've done the neighborhoods, you've done the exhibits. Kind of what else are you working on? I know you have historysouth.org.
Yeah, I'm super busy. It's really cool. Among the other things that I do, I work for a community building initiative, which has a series of bus tours, Charlotte in Black and White and more. Mm-hmm. They are dedicated to helping folks understand the layers of history, sometimes the history that you can't see, that when we come to a moment of stress in our community, it bubbles up.
Right.
And so community building initiative, an important thing. Been doing a lot of work with a number of neighborhoods on the west side, including over here in the West Boulevard, Wilkinson Boulevard area, Freedom Drive, but particularly along Beatty's Ford Road, really historic part of town. There's a neighborhood adjacent to Johnson C. Smith University called McCrory Heights. Mm-hmm. And if you know that part of town, you know the McCrory YMCA. It's the same guy. He was the president of Johnson C. Smith University. And after World War II, as there were lots of well-educated African-American professionals here, they could not buy in a neighborhood like Cotswold.
Right.
And so he built the equivalent of Cotswold called mm-hmm. McCrory Heights. And a lot of the African-American institution builders were there. A lot of the pioneering black elected officials. Just amazing things. Houses by Harvey Gantt, who's best known as our first African-American mayor, but actually desegregated Clemson University before that. So I'm doing all of that kind of stuff, and then I work for the Charlotte Observer, contributing a column about once a month called Food from Home,
yes,
which looks like restaurant reviews, but it's actually an opportunity for me to talk with people who are bringing traditions from other parts of the U.S., other parts of the world, to become Southern traditions.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, one quick note on McCrory Heights. So this is my first of many nerding out real quick on Charlotte history. There's a really good Charlotte Magazine article. I think you may...
Michael Graff.
Yeah, yeah. You quoted in that?
Probably.
Yeah, I think you were. on McCrory Heights recently. Right. So if you're not familiar with what Tom was just talking about, check out that article because it really is like the cradle almost of the leadership of the Charlotte civil rights movement mm-hmm. like started right there. So very important neighborhood and interesting article. But going back to kind of the bus tours and that type of thing, you mentioned the possibly hidden history that has impacts in kind of current events today. I know a lot of your work has focused on that, kind of the history of the neighborhoods and really what that meant. Do you have like a high level overview of kind of what exactly are you talking about there when it comes to the history of like redlining in neighborhoods and things like that? Can you talk a little bit about like what do people learn that is surprising to them on those bus tours?
When I was here in the 80s, I found as I went back working for the Landmarks Commission back before about 1900 that Charlotte was not segregated. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I kind of watch people's eyes. I'm looking at your eyes out there right now. And you all said, what? He said Charlotte was not segregated. It's a Southern city. Of course it was segregated. Well, it's not until about 1900 that mm-hmm. happens. It happens at a time when there's a whole lot of economic turmoil. There's a depression in the early 1890s. People are looking for somebody to blame.
Mm-hmm.
And the folks who want power say, blame them. Blame mm-hmm. African Americans. And give us the power.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 1900, there's a new North Carolina Constitution that says you have to pay to vote, which limits a lot of folks.
Yep.
And then you have to pass a literacy test. And it sounds great, but it's basically the registrar asks you questions until you fail if he doesn't want you to
right.
vote. So, you know, there's this sorting out that starts then, but then it gets kicked into overdrive when the federal government in the 1930s, trying to do good, get us out of the Depression, sends people around to map the good credit risk neighborhoods in the United yep. States. The mortgage market froze like right. it did in 2008. And so they green line a lot of neighborhoods in Myers Park, Eastover, South and East Charlotte.
Yep.
And correspondingly red line neighborhoods like where the professor lived around Johnson C. Smith University.
Right.
And there's a whole bunch of other layers to that. But what it does is it makes it really hard for African Americans to own their own home.
Mm-hmm.
And the way American subsidies to homeowners go, if you don't get on that gravy train early,
right.
you end up severely disadvantaged. And it gets much worse in the 50s and 60s when there's federal money to tear down quote-unquote blighted neighborhoods.
Yep.
Those would be neighborhoods with a lot of absentee landlords
right.
who don't keep up the properties.
Right.
And which neighborhoods are those?
Right.
Well, the neighborhood of Brooklyn,
yep.
Which has been in the news recently, gets demolished at that point. And so even though redlining is now illegal and has been illegal for about, well, Fair Housing Act 50 years ago,
yep.
You know, I know that I am in my house because my dad was able to buy his house,
right.
give me a loan for the
like
down payment.
Generational transfer
yeah.
of wealth.
And,
yeah.
And as the property values are raising in Charlotte, I'm benefiting.
Right. Right.
Partly because I was accidentally born my father's kid instead of,
right.
you know, if I'd been born in an African-American family or if I'd been in an integrated neighborhood.
Right.
And so understanding the momentum of history.
Right.
And how things that divide us are the result of people's decisions.
Right.
In some ways can make you really angry, but it also can give you the power to say we are people too.
Right.
And so the decisions we make in where we go to school, you know, where we work, where we choose to live, where we go out to eat, who we hang out with, those either can reinforce patterns we don't like or mm-hmm. they can set new patterns. And that's a great thing about Charlotte. Charlotte has a lot of youthful energy, a lot of growth, a lot of possibility. We can make better decisions here.
That kind of leads directly into the question I want to ask is, I feel like we're in a point in time in Charlotte, especially after the protest of a year or so ago, is everyone's, how do we move forward? How do we, you know, you hear 50 out of 50, how do we keep going? And it's great to push forward, but you make a very good point of, well, what's happened is because of our history. How do you balance or how do you bring the history to people's mind and make them have an understand or help them have an understanding of what's happening is a direct result of past actions that need to be reconciled before we even move to the future.
Right. How do you do that? Well,
it's
I
a tough
try
question.
And,
sorry about that.
I try really hard to hang out with bloggers who have yeah. a lot of ears.
Yeah. No, but like, I guess
seriously, I mean, this is what you all are doing mm-hmm. in order helping people who are new to Charlotte because of their age or because of their geographical background. We need to know each other's stories in order to truly be a community.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's the perfect answer. I guess I was just got stuck in my own thought right there. But one thing I also want to pivot on is we talk about how communities are built. And one thing you like to focus on is food. And can you kind of explain to us, like I live just off Central. So like, how does a place like that become so diverse in all the different food offerings as you go down Central? And how does that develop to be so it's incredible as you drive down there?
Nobody planned Central Avenue. what happened was that stuff got old and worn out and undesirable. And this is a powerful lesson that I learned. I assumed that if stuff was undesirable, it was bad. And if it's old and kind of worn, you know, America doesn't embrace that.
Right.
And then I started, you know, following my stomach. And my tummy loves Central Avenue because you can park once and eat your way around the world. And you know, that happens not in, quote unquote, the best neighborhoods, the South Parks
right.
and stuff like that, because the rents are too high.
Right.
And so there's a wonderful book by a woman named Jane Jacobs called The Death and Life of Great American Cities. And when I read that book, I began to realize that we need old buildings. Historic buildings, yeah. Restored buildings,
right.
yeah. But we need rundown, ordinary
yeah.
buildings so that you could, for instance, start a Serbian restaurant.
Right.
Intermezzo is, looks right. like a pizza parlor over there, but it's a Serbian restaurant. Or you could start a co-working space. You could call it Huga. You could have podcasts coming out of there. The kind of place where we are right now, you guys can't see that because, you know, we don't have color
podcasts.
But this kind of thing happens in neighborhoods that are quote unquote not the best neighborhoods. And that is not only a lesson about how the economy works,
right.
how geography works, how opportunity works, but it's also a lesson that resonates with all of us because I don't know about you, but I am not the best looking person in the world. I'm not the smartest person in the room. I'm not the richest person in the room. All those things that are traditionally good, I ain't got them.
Right.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah.
But I am only speaking for myself. But you know, we need to appreciate the ordinary. We need to appreciate the place where there's space for creativity. And I love Central Avenue because
yeah.
that's that space.
So how did, other than being a place with cheap rent, how did these communities that are represented in these different food, like restaurants, how did they come to identify Charlotte and Central Avenue specifically as a place where they could hang a shingle?
Everybody's got a different story. We were going to do an exhibition at Levy Museum of the New South that kind of answered that question and hired a journalist who was good at interviewing people and all of that. And every story was different, but they were all basically the same story. They lived someplace else in the United States. These are people who have an international background. They already live someplace else in the United States. They heard that Charlotte had a better climate. It
yeah.
was cleaner. It had less crime. And they came here. They looked for a place that they could afford.
Yeah.
A place where they could start a business. A place where their kids could you know, and exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
That any of you
Everybody
have
else.
Ever considered moving to a new place did. And if you go down Central Avenue, there are people who I live off Central Avenue. People tell me, "Oh, you live in the Spanish part of town."
Right.
Well, if you are primed to see Chinatown or Little Italy or something like that, the way that early 20th century cities handled ethnicity, you don't see it in Charlotte.
Yeah.
Or if you do, well, there is a bunch of Spanish signs, so that must be the Spanish part of town. But, you know, my favorite shopping center near Sharon Amity and Central Avenue has a Mexican grocery, a Salvadoran pupusa joint. Pupusas are the little cornmeal pancakes. They don't have them in Mexico. They have them in Salvador. Next to that is Cedarland, which is folks from Lebanon and Syria and
okay.
Morocco. Next to that is a Vietnamese soup parlor. And then you go around the corner next to the Vietnamese grocery, there's an Ethiopian restaurant and a restaurant and grocery store from Somalia in Africa. And dang, you know, I am 62 years old. I can remember the separate white and colored signs at
yeah.
the old train station.
Right.
And this is a new South.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's the time frame for all of this springing
very,
up?
Very recent,
yeah.
at least for me. I just told you how old I am. But in 1990, Charlotte, most major southern cities had almost no foreign-born folks.
Right.
Here it was maybe 1%. Atlanta, being a bigger commercial center, would have had a little bit more. But generally, it's gone from about 1% to about 15% in about the last 25 years.
Okay.
Bam. And this is not only amazing in our time, but back, you know, 100 years ago or a little bit more, when the last big immigrant wave hit the United States, those folks did not go to the South because it was poor.
Right.
And so they went to the Lower East Side of New York, or they went to Chicago, or they went to Cleveland, or they went to Pittsburgh, or they went way out west and took up land.
Right.
And so we didn't have, when I came to Charlotte in 1981, there was not a decent slice of pizza here, much less a bagel.
Right.
Interesting.
I'd still argue about the bagel. I'm still looking for the perfect deli. I think the best, if someone opened like a really good deli uptown, there is some money to be made there.
Chef Alyssa agreed with us when we threw that out there when we were talking to her. And now Brugger's closed, so like not even the chain.
All right, I'm calling copyright on this idea. This is officially ours.
I'm sure. Well, our current mayor, when she was on, agreed that a New York style deli.
Yeah, so we got the mayor on our
priority.
Side.
Yeah, exactly. So
I'm going to. So we've been digging the history for 121 episodes now. We have some questions that we want to hit you with. we have rapid fire questions coming. These are kind of medium fire.
John's medium fire.
Yeah. First question is, who is your favorite charlatan in history?
Miller Yoho.
Agreed.
Or John Shart. It's really hard to pick. Let me think about that.
John has a pitch for somebody. He really
All right, make your pitch.
Count Rivafinoli.
Ah, the gold guy.
Yeah.
Tell the story.
Because he basically oversaw, I forget which mining company, but oversaw the mining company. And his job consisted of basically waking up in the gold district, we now call the gold district, walking up Moorhead in a cane and like flowing robes in order to go to his office, and just like having breakfast and lunch and then just like walking home. So he's like ornate. Oh, and it's questionable if, so his name is Count, right? So it's questionable if he was even of Italian nobility descent. So he says possibly the charlatan who became a charlatan, didn't mean that one.
Oh.
Came and became like this ostentatious character in a town lacking ostentatious
Just
characters,
Ric Flair
let's
before
say.
Ric
yeah,
Flair.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the Ooh, that is well said.
And so anyway, so a colorful guy from the past that did some cool stuff. So that's my favorite charlatan.
Somebody who I overlapped with but never had the courage to talk to was Bonnie Cohn.
Oh.
And Bonnie Cohn, the old student center at UNC Charlotte is named for her, but she was the woman who basically invented UNC Charlotte.
Oh, yeah.
And when she did that in the 40s, women were not supposed to be doing anything in public. They were supposed to make cookies, you know. And she was a school teacher, which was one of the few jobs that women did outside of the home that they got paid for. And she figured out how to get federal GI Bill money to start some college classes at what was then Central High School downtown. And that ended up as being UNC Charlotte.
Right.
She was never the chancellor at UNC Charlotte. And people tell me that's because chancellors are men, of course.
Yeah, right.
And so she was someone nonetheless, who was not expected to do. It's like what I was just saying a little bit ago about Central Avenue.
Yeah.
The society did not put a value on what she had.
Yeah.
To the extent that one would now. And boy, did she have value.
Miller, do you know what year? You know the answer to this. Do you know what year she famously went to Raleigh? You know this. 1949, because...
Oh, the 49ers.
The 49ers are so named, not because of the gold rush, but because
never
that was
heard
the
that
year.
One.
Yeah.
See, I don't know if it's true. Tom's never heard it. I don't know if it's true.
Yeah, so spurious. Automatically spurious if Tom hasn't heard that. Yeah.
Tom, what's much like that one, what's another like underrated story that you love telling people about Charlotte?
People do not know that Charlotte was a major country music and gospel music recording center before Nashville.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nashville cranks up after World War II. It has WSM, the Grand Old Opry, big clear channel radio station. Charlotte had WBT, which it still has. But back in the day, back before they worked out how to do recorded royalties for playing music on the radio off of records, all radio was live. And WBT is still Clear Channel from Cuba to Canada. And that was a big deal. And major people came here to record. Major artists, Bill Monroe, the guy that invented bluegrass music, the Carter family. Luke Jordan, who's my favorite blues singer. Just all these amazing people were in the studio here.
It was a basement of Hotel Charlotte, right?
It was a bunch of different places. They were on the 10th floor of Hotel Charlotte. There's a plaque actually across from Dean and DeLuca downtown where some of the original stuff was at 212 South Tryon Street.
Huh.
But boy, it would have been something to be in those sessions because they would record one side at a time, two-sided 78 RPM record. And most of that stuff is out on CD now, and there are literally thousands of songs that are recorded here.
Wow.
And stuff that you know was recorded here.
Right. Very cool.
So this is a very important question. This means a lot to John. He believes it.
Oh.
I would say show me the evidence, but I also love the story of it. Is the mech deck real?
No.
Oh, you just broke John's. I was not expecting this answer.
This area did not like the king and queen as much as the king and queen would have liked to be liked.
Right.
And they liked him enough so that they named the city after the queen.
Yeah.
And then a few years later turned around and disrespected her with some kind of declaration. There was a declaration. The way that it got remembered, it was in 1775.
Right.
It was in the spring of 1775. And they declared something and life went on and they had a revolution. They were really busy. It got to be 40, 50 years later. And as people do, they looked back and they asked the old guys, didn't you sign some kind of declaration thing back in 1775? And they said, yes, we did. When was it? And nobody had a copy of it.
Right.
Here's what I think. I think they said, well, you know, it was after we had the cotton planted. And, spring was here. I remember that. And they came up with this date, May 20th.
Okay.
And they didn't have the piece of paper. They didn't have anything to corroborate the date, May 20th. Not a bad guess.
Yeah.
Years, decades later, I mean, you know, I can remember 1975.
Right.
It is now almost as far
the
back.
Same distance.
I have
no idea
what I was doing in May of 1975.
Right.
But in decades later, people doing newspaper research found in some of the newspapers, there were new newspapers in Charlotte, but there were in other parts of the colonies, reprint of this thing that was called the Mecklenburg Resolves.
Yeah.
It had been signed on May 31st, darn close.
Right.
And it said the authority of the king and crown is null and void. It was not called the Mecklenburg Declaration of Independence.
Right.
But it did what the mech deck did. There are evidence of it in the colonial records. It really existed.
Right.
I think the worst case scenario is that there actually was a mech deck.
Yes.
May 20th, 1775. And the people who signed it were not public relations savvy.
Yeah.
And they never told anybody about
right.
it. They didn't send it to the newspapers. They didn't send it to the colonial governor.
Right.
They were a bunch of yahoos.
Right.
And
which
I don't want them to be yahoos. And so I think that the May 20th date and the quote-unquote Mecklenburg Declaration of Independence is a natural misremembering of something that was very real and very revolutionary.
What about the record of James Jack's ride in the Moravian?
They have dates. Sometime in June.
Yeah.
Of 1775, this guy, James Jack, and there's a statue of him downtown that was built recently, got in his horse and rode up through what's now the
77,
Old Salem thing, up to Philadelphia, and then rode back again. And there are indications that he made that ride.
Right.
Great. Was he carrying something that had been written on May 20th
or
something that had been written on May 31st?
Gotcha.
May 31st.
John, are you convinced?
Because we have other corroboration. But seriously, that having a declaration and then not telling anybody about it means you don't understand what a declaration is.
Yeah.
And they were not stupid people. They knew what they were doing.
Right.
And, you know, they wished to change the world. And that's why they sent copies to the colonial governor.
So, I mean,
the guy that they were disrespecting.
Right. So, but I mean, the dates on the state flag, right? So in the scenario you described, it was just a PR campaign 40, 50 years later, and that PR at that campaign, time they decided, or whatever led to, like, there was a declaration, right?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, asking the old guys about the history. And, that's when people start getting interested in history. It's 40 or 50 years down the road.
Sure.
And unless... you know, you backed up your hard drive, all those floppy disks are gone.
Right, right.
It's my life.
Right.
And, yep.
Okay, fair enough. Well.
John does not, he'll never be convinced about this, but.
And that's the thing, is that for folks
dreamer.
Who are serious about the Mecklenburg Declaration of Independence, it's become an article of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that there is not evidence for it, it doesn't impact that.
Okay. So we are done with the medium fire questions. We are now moving to rapid fire.
And Lord.
These are the very most important, and with an asterisk by it, saying not important at all. What is your favorite all-time worldwide historical figure?
I tend not to look at things that way. I'm really interested in how people get together to do stuff.
John wrote that question, not me.
And, well, it's a telling one. Because I'm, for instance, the civil rights movement is so powerful in Charlotte, and there is a wonderful spokesperson who's still alive named Charles Jones, who helped lead the sit-ins here. But it turns out that he worked with a guy named B.B. Delane, who I got to meet, who had the keys to the student athletics bus.
Hmm.
At Johnson C. Smith, and so they could ferry people back and forth, and there were a couple of other folks who were intimately, and so Charles Jones would be the first to tell you that he did not create the sit-ins.
Hmm.
He was an important person in making the sit-ins happen. The sit-ins changed our world because it was a youth movement all across the South and
in
parts of the North, and I've even met people from Europe who would go sit in at a Woolworths in 1960. In solidarity with folks here. And so I think we wait for that great leader to come along.
Yeah.
If only we had a great leader, then everything would be fine.
Great man theory, right?
Yeah. And the reality is that we all need to be working towards whatever it is we want and finding allies. Mm-hmm. And so.
Yeah, I like that. Good answer.
I wrote this question. If you had a nickel every time someone said Charlotte doesn't have any history, how rich would you be?
When I came here in 1981 and I told people I was a historian, they said, you should go to Charleston. They have history. And then I left for a while and I came back in 99 to work for Levine Museum of the New South, and people said, oh, Charlotte had history, but it's torn it all down. And... that's kind of pitiful, but it's an improvement.
Yeah.
I think people do appreciate or want to appreciate what's here. We have that same problem that I mentioned with the Beckdeck or the Mecklenburg Resolves or whatever. It takes about 40 or 50 years for us to get beyond thinking that, that's just old stuff.
Yeah.
My parents like that stuff. Can't be worth anything.
Right.
And... because this community has had more money each decade since the railroads came in the 1850s, we have never slowed down.
Hmm.
Pittsburgh slowed down.
That's a really
Pittsburgh,
good point.
I love
I've never
Pittsburgh.
Thought of that.
Wonderful old buildings. Charleston went to sleep after the Civil War.
Yeah,
That's not a good thing if you're in the middle of it, but it's a great thing if you want historic buildings to stay around.
Yeah,
The areas that... I love as the built environment, Myers Park.
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at the number of buildings that are coming down in Myers Park. mm-hmm. right now, and the Macquarie Heights neighborhood, mm-hmm. all of the close-in neighborhoods that were built as suburbs, there's a lot of houses coming down, a lot of replacement of houses, and I think, ironically, that sometimes the exact people who are replacing those houses are also saying, well, Charlotte doesn't have
yeah,
any history.
Right, yeah.
And they've torn it all down.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
So,
yeah, interesting.
All right, so we're going to play a quick game. I want to say a Charlotte icon, and you have to say overrated or underrated based on their historical importance. Some of these are serious, some of these are not, kind of like this podcast. Hornet's Nest.
Underrated or overrated? Again, I don't think this way very well. underrated.
Railroad.
Definitely underrated. Yes. Super important.
Yep.
The Baker family.
The Baker family is in Jim Baker.
Yes.
People have forgotten who they are.
Yeah.
I think they're underrated.
All right. John, I'm sorry. The mech deck.
The mech deck. it's great to discuss, but overrated.
NASCAR.
It's going through some tough times now, trying to find an audience in this day and age. It was the fastest growing sport 15, 20 years ago in the United States. At the moment, I think it's underrated. I don't think it gets the respect it deserves.
Rocking chairs at the airport.
Oh, man, I love those. What a great idea. Whoever that is should be an honorary Charlotte mayor or something.
Well,
John?
His name... His name is Champ Land, and he will be the history segment coming up at the end of this.
Yes. Last one, textile mills.
Oh, underrated. That is why we're a big city.
Criminally underrated, mills,
we
I would
say.
Yeah. The railroad and the mills.
That's it.
In the way people talk about Charlotte's history, like the baseball team should not be the Knights. They should be something related to the mills or the railroad, in my opinion.
It. That's absolutely true.
Last question. What is one thing you wish every Charlottean spent more time doing?
Talking to their neighbors. It is real easy. And when I say neighbors, I mean the next door neighbors, but also the crosstown neighbors. Mm-hmm. This is a city that geographically, it's real easy to be in your bubble.
Mm-hmm.
It's real easy to be a prisoner of your zip code. And we need things that get us out of that comfort zone and into being comfortable with how diverse and how fast-changing Charlotte really is.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a pleasure. We really, really do appreciate it. What are, if people want to follow along with what you're doing, get involved, where kind of plug away?
I love Facebook, and friend me on Facebook, Tom Hanchett, and www.historysouth.org is my website. There's also wonderful stuff on the CM Story. Yep. .org website, Charlotte Mecklenburg Story. It's run by the Carolina Room of the Public Library. And the Charlotte Mecklenburg Historic Landmarks Commission has an amazing website with histories of literally hundreds of key buildings in our area.
And if you would like to know where all the history segments come from every week that we do one, go to those three places as well. Because those are my primary sources for all those things.
Well, Dom, we really appreciate you coming in.
Yes,
I consider
you
a friend now, so I just sent you a request. It's now time for our weekly segment where John enlightens us with a piece of Charlotte history that you might not have known. So the next time someone says, "Hey man, Charlotte doesn't have any history," you look them right in the eye and repeat the following segment verbatim. Take it away, John.
So this week we are talking about the rocking chairs at Charlotte Douglas International Airport.
I would say an iconic thing in Charlotte. Like, people will fly through the airport and take pictures of it, like
yeah,
famous people.
Right. Yeah, it's probably one of the biggest things Charlotte is known for on the national, nay, the international stage.
Like when I was flying in from the H Moon, that was like the first thing we saw coming out of the gate, and I'm like, man, it's good to be back
home. Good to be back. The land of rocking chairs in the airport. So
It is actually, would you be surprised to learn, that they have actually not been around that long.
John?
Yeah.
Why is it a history segment then?
Well, history starts the second after now. I just made that up. Anyway. So the chairs became a staple of the airport after a 1997 photography exhibit entitled Porch Sitting, a Charlotte Regional Family Album. In order to give the airport's main atrium a look and feel of a front porch along a tree-lined street. So it's just an exhibit, just kind of something they threw out there that'd be nice for the travelers. And it featured these rocking chairs. So the exhibit had a shelf life of a couple months, and they wound up taking it down, including the chairs. So great was the outrage.
It really
from
rocked
travelers.
The boat.
So great was the outrage from the travelers. And they complained enough about how much they enjoyed the rocking chairs that the airport decided to bring back the chairs, and they've been a fixture of the atrium ever since.
They really didn't have a leg to stand
1997.
On.
1997. Oh, my God. So the chairs themselves are called Kennedy Rockers. There's actually there's some layers to this story. So the chairs are called Kennedy Rockers, as they are designed after the design preferred by President John F. Kennedy to alleviate his back pain. So that is a style of chair that has traces back to JFK. The chairs are provided by Troutman Chair Company, based in nearby Troutman,
North
Carolina.
One of my top five favorite chair companies.
Oh, there you go. You heard it here first, endorsed by Miller. So the chairs are made by hand from North Carolina oak and are glue-free because all of the pieces are interlocking and just connect together. I found that fascinating.
So do I.
Also, the guy who in 1997 owned Troutman Chair Company, and I believe still does, has one of the greatest names of all time.
Give it to me.
His name is Champ Land.
Champ Land!
Such a good name. Anyway, so since the trend of rocking chairs in airports began in 1997 at Charlotte Douglas International Airport, they have expanded to other airports around the country, including Seattle and Miami. So there you go. There's a little background on the rocking chairs at the airport.
My mind is blown. It's time for our weekly segment, Supportive Words from Supportive Guy. Supportive Guy is the anti-troll. His mission is to promote positivity and whimsy in hopes to create an internet community that is truly glad online. And as part of this mission, each week, he writes some supportive words for our podcast listeners. So as always, you're listening to the inspiring words of Supportive Guy as we wrap up this week's episode. Take it away, John.
Greetings and salutations, dear listeners. I hope today finds you walking barefoot on a lawn that has been dethatched of all problems and fertilized with your hopes and dreams. I love his intro. What an honor it was to be joined by Charlotte community historian Tom Hanchett today. I'm sure Tom mentioned how our mighty city was founded when Queen Charlotte came riding in on the back of Ric Flair, holding a hop, drop, and roll in one hand and a spear in the other. She threw that spear with all her might right through the heart of the gigantic hornet's nest, which had previously rendered the area uninhabitable. She leapt from the Nature Boy's shoulders and said, "I, Queen Charlotte, first of my name, declare this land to be known henceforth as Charlotte, North Carolina, the Queen City." Then she shotgunned another hop, drop, and roll and let out a mighty, "Woo!" which was probably what inspired Ric Flair to adopt the catchphrase so many years later. She later went on to open...
I don't know this word.
Open a brewery with a giant... a meadery.
A
place where they have mead. With a giant patio. And spawned the Charlotte Agenda article, "Should we let pet saber-toothed tigers into the meadery's patio when so many people have been mauled by pet saber-toothed tigers or not?" Nah?
Can you repeat that?
No. I recalled all of that from memory, so Tom can let us know if there's any minor contractions. Have a great week, everyone. Until next time. Woo!
Just want to say, like, about 5 minutes ago, a little buzz picked up in my earpiece. I don't know if the listeners can hear it, but I'm leaving it just for you, Chuptastic.